Well, we're going to talk about the Stanley Cup Final. Game 3 of the final between the Blues and the Bruins gets going in St. Louis tomorrow. Our man Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com now joins us. But before we get into Stanley Cup Final talk, Mike has been spending some time at the Combine in Buffalo. What is going on, Mike? How are you enjoying Buffalo and the Combine so far?
Well, I'm actually back in Toronto, guys. Okay. I was there for, and first of all, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to come on, talk to the listeners in Canada's most beautiful city. And looking forward to coming to the draft there. And I know a lot of people are.
Yes.
I mean, anytime, not shockingly, a lot of us are trying to find a way to spend a few extra days there. Anytime a company pays for you to get out to Vancouver, we want to make the most of it. But no, I go to St. Louis for leave tonight for game three, but mostly at the Combine, I was talking to a lot of the GMs who have since left. And the way it works, guys, is that the interview processes with the kids happen early in the week. And that's where the general managers all congregate in Buffalo, because they obviously want to be in as part of the interview process, asking the kids questions. And like I said, being part of that whole thing. And then most of the GMs will end up leaving either today, or some left yesterday, because, you know, the scouting directors and guys like that can take care of the fitness portions of it, where the kids go through all the physical testing, and that's what's going on the next couple days in Buffalo. So, but it's interesting. The biggest thing I came out of it, and obviously there's a lot of agents there as well, is that there seems to be a feeling among hockey types, both from the agents and from the front office personnel people with the various NHL teams, that they're, you know, and we've been seeing this trend a lot more in recent years, is that you can expect a significant amount of big trades. I think that a lot of teams are up against the cap. There's other teams, some teams need to get to the floor. But I think there's going to be some significant players traded and significant contracts moved between now and the NHL draft. So it's going to be fascinating. I don't think, guys, that we're going to see something, whatever. I think it was that 37 minutes of chaos a few years ago where we saw Taylor Hall traded. We saw PK Subban traded. And we saw Steven Stamkos re-sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning, although, hey, bring it on. I'm all for action like that. That's what makes writers and talk show hosts survive, is days like that. But I do think that there's going to be quite a bit of movement.
Yeah, and when you start looking at the fact that Jeff Skinner looks to be closing in on a deal to stay in Buffalo, Brock Nelson signing an extension with the Islanders, so a couple of big targets already off the free agent market, it looks like. So that means if you're trying to improve your team, trade is becoming more and more viable. And one trade, a big one, could have already gone down if it wasn't for Phil Kessel saying no to the Minnesota Wild. What's going on with the Penguins, and how much movement may we see from that club?
I just think that when Jim Rutherford looked at the Penguins, he thinks they have to get younger. And, you know, that core has done an outstanding job, and I don't think Jimmy has any problem with that, but I just think that's the way he looks at it. He does have some, movable pieces. Kessel, is in his 30s, but, he's still a viable goal scorer, and to me, that's still the most coveted thing that GMs are looking for, is people that can put the puck in the net. But, judging from reports, Kessel vetoed the used his no trade for Minnesota. Didn't want to go there because he doesn't think that they're competitive enough at this point where they stand. And you know what? I mean, I've heard a lot of criticism against Phil Kessel about this whole thing, guys. But you know what? If a team gives you a no trade, okay, then why would we ever criticize somebody for actually implementing something that the team gave him? It's his right to say no, and he said no.
Mike, we've also been hearing lately, yesterday, Elliot Friedman also and other reporters reporting that Nikita Zaitsev, Toronto Maple Leafs, kind of coming to the end of their relationship. They're going to try and find him a fresh start. Do you have an idea or an understanding of which team might have some interest in Zaitsev? And if so, is that necessary? Does it kind of require Toronto to sweeten the pot? And does that involve one of their young roster players that needs a new contract this summer? Say someone like Andreas Johnsson, for example.
No, I don't think that you'd ever see Kyle Dubas put one of those guys in order to get Zaitsev out of there. He wants to sign those two guys, them being Johnsson and Kapanen. So that's what we're looking at right now. The thing is, Zaitsev got he's still got 4 or 5 years left at $4.5 million. Is that a huge cap hit? No, it's becoming more digestible, as the years go on and the cap goes up. I think the more alarming thing is that he seems to have digressed the last couple of years. And, you know, is there a team out there that's going to take a chance on it? I think that, you know, anything the Leafs could get back for him, given that the salary crunch that they're going to be under, will be a bonus. I think they look at it that if anybody takes his contract, then it's a successful trade on their part. I just haven't heard of any partners yet for him. There's been rumblings that maybe the Islanders, because it was Lou Lamoriello that gave him the contract in the first place. But we'll have to wait and see because, as you guys know, there's nobody better in the league than Lou at holding his cards closely to the vest.
What do you think happens next with Jason Zucker? Supposed to go to Calgary? That didn't happen. Supposed to go to Pittsburgh? That didn't happen. And here's a guy who clearly sees that there's no future in Minnesota.
Well, I think that they're going to move him somewhere. I think he's one of their more marketable commodities. Again, he's a guy that can put the puck in the net. It's been out there that they've tried to trade him. So, when a player hears that, how much loyalty can you have to an organization, or would you want to have to an organization when it's publicly been confirmed that they've been trying to get rid of you? And I think that's what the Wild have been trying to do. You know, we saw Charlie Coyle go. Zucker's been involved in these talks, and it seems to me that the Wild are trying to, that those two guys were part of the young core that the Wild thought that they would, kind of succeed with the last two or three years, and it hasn't happened. And it's almost like they're trying to hit the reset button and say, you know what, we're going to look to try to start a different core. So I would be surprised if Jason Zucker is still around to start the season because, number one, he's actively being shot. But number two, how much motivation as a player are you going to have when this team has practically said, no, we don't really want you?
We're talking to Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com here on Sportsnet 650. And here in Vancouver, we've heard a lot about Jim Benning trying to improve the defense for obvious reasons. And one of the avenues he'll be looking to is via trade. Have you heard anything from Vancouver about how active they may try to be via the trade route?
No, I talked to Jim Benning a couple of days ago. That piece will probably be coming out in the next day or two. No, and he doesn't. He does want to add to the defense, but he's not the one thing that he is steadfast. And guys, he said the same thing to me before the trade deadline. He is not going to trade away assets, aka draft picks or young players. To try for the instant fix, and I just don't see them making the big splash. And I'm just throwing some names out there. If anybody thinks that, if Nashville decides to trade Subban or somebody like that, I just don't think that Jim Benning's ready in that position to do that yet with this team. I think that he wants to stay the course. I liked the way the Canucks, a couple of years ago, and you guys would know this better, I'm an outsider looking in, but a couple of years ago, you look and you say, where are the Canucks prospects other than Bo Horvath, and how is this rebuild going to go going forward? And then, I've been pleasantly surprised at some of the assets they've been able to accrue. Obviously, getting a deal done with Brock Besser to that point is going to be very, very interesting, because I think he is one of the centerpieces. Obviously, you guys got to see a taste of Quinn Hughes, and I think that's a reason for Canucks fans to be excited too. And they have a top 10 pick again, and I think that I think you just add to the cachet of young talent, and I think it's a mistake if you try for the instant gratification right now, because I think they probably need another year before you start making those splashy moves. What would you guys think to that?
Well, I think that they need to make a bold move if they can, but obviously you can't target guys in their 30s. You can't overpay for free agents that are too old. If you can find a deal for a young defenseman that fits in long-term as a top four, great. If you can get, a guy like Panarin in free agency, great, but chances you land something like that is difficult to do. And the only question or concern we have in Vancouver is, if you can't get your top targets, do you knee-jerk and sign somebody you shouldn't be signing? And that's the biggest fear fans have.
Oh, yeah. Because the last thing you want is aging guys, like you say, middle-class targets, aging guys who's, probably are on the downside of their careers. They're still effective, but how much do they really help you? And now, I will say this. We're talking about free agents here. Let me bring up one guy, Erik Karlsson. I've known Erik for a long time. Class act. Great player. But, watching him in the San Jose series, and you start to think, he has not been fully healthy, you could argue. Even though he started the season, yeah, I know, but when he had his ankle surgery, they said it would take like 12 to 18 months. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been healthy since he played on one leg for the Senators, who almost made it to the Stanley Cup Final 2 years ago, that Pittsburgh scored in double overtime of Game 7 to stop that. But, there's still people in hockey that think that somebody's going to give Erik Karlsson $10 million a year. And when I hear that, I just say buyer beware, because we haven't seen the Erik Karlsson pre-injury that we all remembered being in awe of, because he was such a special talent. And, I know the doctors will look at him, whichever team is in, teams are interested in him. He'll probably be looking for a long-term deal. And, maybe it works out, but I think with somebody like him, you've got to, like I said, it's got to be buyer beware.
I think that's very well put, given the status of, you're right, where his career might be heading as he's getting closer to 30. Mike, before we let you go, the series shifting to St. Louis tomorrow night, Game 3.
Yep.
What do you think is going to happen next year in the Stanley Cup Final? Because it looked like Boston was so strong in Game 1, and then the scenario got completely flipped there in Game 2.
Well, that didn't surprise me, and I think that, I've covered this Blues team. I covered them against Dallas in the second round, and I covered them in against San Jose in the third round. And the one thing I saw, I was impressed. Well, a couple things I was impressed with. One, this is a deeper team than I think a lot of people give credit for. And number two, their resiliency and ability to bounce back. I know a lot of people after Game 1, like you said, thought the Bruins had this series in hand, and I didn't, because here's an example, and I think it's the best example to that goes to the character of the Blues and their ability to bounce back. So in Game 3 against San Jose, they lose 5-4 on the hand pass that wasn't called. So emotionally, you could see how crushed they were, how angry they were. Jordan Binnington slammed his stick against the glass after the, no penalty was called and the goal stood up. So then you're thinking, okay, he's rattled, they're rattled, they have every right to be rattled, but this could be an issue. And what happens? They win the next three games, and Jordan Binnington only gives up two goals in the next three games. The way that if they can come overcome that, I think they can overcome anything. And we saw Binnington the other night, too, in game two. Those first two goals, guys, they were not good goals. I mean, five hole, and he'd like to have them back. But once he let those two in, that was it. He shut it the rest of the way. He made stops on a lot harder shots than the ones that went in. So, you know, I think it's more, for me, it's not very surprising what happened. I just think it was eye-opening to people that haven't watched this team very much as to how good the St. Louis Blues team is and how resilient they are.
And I do believe they have a chance of winning this series, and they can take control starting tomorrow in St. Louis. He is Mike Zeisberger. Follow him on Twitter, courtesy of NHL.com. Zeis, always a pleasure getting you on here on Sportsnet 650. Enjoy your trip to St. Louis. It's a fun city, and we'll talk again very, very soon.
Yeah, call me anytime, guys, and hopefully we can get together in person at the draft. But there's still some hockey to be played before we get to that point. So thanks again for having me on.
Sportsnet 650.